President Barack Obama is in Alaska this week. He gave comments at the Glacier Conference in Anchorage yesterday, and today he's traveling to Seward to visit Exit Glacier and view the effects of climate change firsthand. We've had other presidential visits in the past, but none of this length. What have the other presidential visits to Alaska involved, and what was the impact after they left? We're talking about past and present presidential attention on the last frontier, and we'll take your calls today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Laurie Townsend. President Barack Obama will spend time in Seward today, and tomorrow he'll fly to Dillingham to talk to fishing families and local officials. Then he leaves for Kotzebue, which will be a historic first trip above the Arctic Circle by a U.S. president. Here to discuss why this is important and give us some perspective on past visits by the Commander-in-Chief is Pat Porchot. Pat is the former Special Assistant on Alaska Affairs to the Interior Secretary and a former DNR Commissioner. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Lori.
Also with us today is Dermot Cole is on the line from the studios of KUAC in Fairbanks. Hi, Dermot.
Good morning.
Dermot is a longtime Alaska journalist. And also we have a full house today. We also have Jack Roderick, former Anchorage Borough Mayor, correct?
Correct.
Thank you for being with us. And former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, who is also the former chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning.
All right. Good morning. Thanks to my guests and thanks to you. And I just want to put out there before we start talking about this that President Obama, if you're listening and you want to call in and talk to us today, the number is 1-800-478-8255. It's toll free. 1-800-478-8255. Also in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. And that's for the rest of you folks out there, too. You can call in and join our conversation today if you have a presidential visit story or a sighting that you want to discuss. So, there have been a number of past presidential visits. Dermot, you've been covering these types of political visits and been writing about it quite a bit, the president's visit here. Give us a walk down memory lane of what your recollections are of past presidential visits. I know that you don't remember back to some of the far earliest ones, of course. You weren't around then, but tell us what you know about past presidential visits and your coverage.
Well, as President Harding said to me when he got off the train. No, I think that was must have been somebody else. Just in, I guess ever since President Ford came to Eielson Air Force Base in 1975, I've had some dealing on the fringe with covering some of these visits. And where I am in Fairbanks, probably the biggest event was the when President Reagan met Pope John Paul II here in 1984. That occupied us for days and days. It was, for Fairbanks, that was sort of similar to what the President Obama's visit is to Anchorage, Seward, Dillingham, and Kotzebue. And that was only for maybe a day and a half Reagan was here. And it was, these are really historic events, at least for the short term, right? They make a big impact while the visiting dignitaries are here. I guess it remains to be seen what the long-term impact is, though.
Well, and that's some of what I'd like to talk about, what the potential is for longer term impacts. But my guests in the studio here, let's start with you, Mr. Roderick, Jack Roderick, former borough mayor of Anchorage. What are your memories of presidential visits to Alaska?
Well, Jerry Ford must have come down from Fairbanks, and he spent time here, and we had a session out there on the base. I remember, of course, meeting him, and then he went off with Wally Hickel in another room, and that left Kissinger, the press secretary, Red Boucher, and me all together. And I swear to God, this is a fact. All Kissinger wanted to talk about was girls. It's a fact. If Red were here, he would confirm that. He did. He simply wanted to talk about girls. And, of course, we were an expert in that.
Not women, girls?
No, girls. And I checked with a person who seemed to know, and he said that's not a surprising thing at all. Kissinger was known for that. And then, of course, Jerry Ford and I are built about the same. So he was coming out the door, and my wife, Martha, was there, and she went to him, like thinking it was me, and he winked at her. So she liked that. So Jerry Ford winked at my wife, Martha.
All right. Well, that's a pretty interesting memory, and one I'm sure that's kind of crystallized in your mind for all these years. Pat Pourchaud, how about you? What are your recollections of presidential visits?
Well, over the years, I've had a real distinct opportunity to meet three presidents who were visiting Alaska at the time. Two memories stand out. One was official business. When I worked for former Governor Tony Knowles, I was able to accompany the Knowleses out to Elmendorf to be the official greeters for President Clinton when he came to town. And it's very impressive, as we saw in the news yesterday, to see Air Force One touch down and the delegation and the president come off the airplane and then come into the little greeting room there, and got a chance to meet President Clinton and his wife at the time, his wife now, Hillary Clinton. And that was, you know, like so many Alaskans, a real thrill. The other time, though, was as a private citizen, as we saw yesterday, people trying to line up along the roadway to the Captain Cook and to the Dena'ina Center to get a glimpse of the president. When the same visit, when Gerald Ford, President Ford, came to Anchorage and was out at Elmendorf, I brought my then young son with me, and we went out to the base and were looking at the airplane and President Ford coming off the stairs there, and he bolted from the Secret Service people and came right to the line of people, including us, and reached across the rope line and grabbed my son. I had put him up on my shoulders, and he reached across the rope line and shook my son's hand, and always a lasting memory. And I think that's one of the things that we've seen in the news coverage already, that ordinary citizens getting a chance to see or maybe even meet a president of the United States.
I can't imagine the ulcers that gives the Secret Service.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Presidents just go bounding off like that. But it's wonderful that, you know, they do reach out to people, and absolutely that would be a phenomenal memory, to especially for a young person, to be so close to that office and that individual. Mead Treadwell, so what are your earliest memories of presidential visits?
Well, I guess my earliest memory is 1979. I was a reporter for the then Anchorage Times, which was the largest paper in the state. And I was sent over to Elmendorf to meet up with the national press crew and drive across Elmendorf and see Jimmy Carter arrive and then cover his visit. And I just remember that Sam Donaldson was sitting on the tailgate of the car ahead of us, and we almost ran into him. I think he fell off the tailgate. So we got over. Carter was there. On that trip, Carter actually took time with Governor Jay Hammond to go fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like it when a president comes and actually tries to enjoy the country. President Obama is today hiking Exit Glacier. I was down at the National Park hiking with friends last week, and it's going to be a great hike on a day like today. And he's going to go out with Bear Grylls and do something in the wilderness. I loved the story in the Post today that said the Secret Service rejected several of Bear Grylls' ideas. But, you know, so the fact is the president's getting some part of the country. There's a great book called The Making of Mount Rushmore. And it talked about how they had started building Mount Rushmore and they'd run out of money. And then Calvin Coolidge came to the Black Hills to fish, sees it and says, OK, I'll give you federal help. And knowing that the president coming to Alaska could be an action forcing event, I think it's going to be significant for a long time that today he announced that he's going to move up the schedule on icebreakers.
Right.
And we've been pushing for icebreakers. I've pushed for it with former President Bush. I've testified on it before Congress a number of different times. Had a number of conversations at the White House ahead of this trip saying, let's turn the corner on this. And I'm hoping that this is a real corner.
I agree, and I want us to talk more about that in just a little bit. But one thing that I wanted to ask, and you know, maybe the folks assembled here, Dermot, you might know, my earliest memories of covering presidents in the state goes back to all the way to 2009 when President Obama was here the last time and spoke at the base, and I was able to go out there and cover that event. But when we were leaving, one of the people in the line that was leaving from the media area turned around to take a picture of Air Force One, and one of the soldiers there just about confiscated the camera and said, you can't take a picture of Air Force One. And everybody was sort of like shocked, and he said, you have to delete that. Has anyone heard of that before? Because yesterday I saw quite a few pictures of Air Force One landing. And
well, there's all sorts of crazy restrictions. I mean, you know, to see three dump trucks parked in front of the Captain Cook so that a car bomb, you know, couldn't get through to that corner or that tower, you know, is significant. When Dan Quayle was here as vice president, I'd been asked by the White House to advance that during Exxon Valdez. And believe it or not, out at Elmendorf, they had to put up a big screen so nobody could get a shot off just if he had walked through the breezeway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lots of curtains went up on windows where the president was this mm-hmm. time.
Dermot, how about you? Have you heard of people getting in trouble for taking photos such as a shot of Air Force One?
No, that sounds rather extreme to me, but especially seeing as how it's been, you know, Air Force One was in fact photographed on that visit as on almost every other. You know, it could be some low-level official who has a big sense of importance about him or her, you know. That would be my guess. I mean, of course, and there's always, you know, the security around these things is, right, nothing we've seen in many years, right? And again, I'm reading about it and watching and listening from Fairbanks but it does seem like it's having a big impact on downtown Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to join our conversation. Do you have a presidential visit story? Did you meet Richard Nixon or eat soup next to Bill Clinton at the cafe downtown? 550-8422 is the number in Anchorage. 550-8422. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call. And we do have a caller on the line from Nome. Good morning, Chuck.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Lori. Appreciate the opportunity to say hello to Dermot and your rest of your guests. My concern is twofold. I'm at the western edge of the New World here, excluding the Aleutian Chain. I'm below the Arctic Circle, but not by much, at 68 latitude north. I have spent 3 months on an ice station in 1962. Near the North Pole, Arliss 2. I do have some experience in the Arctic. Not that much. I've only been around for 70 plus. But my concern is the cry of climate change. You know, when you look at the age of Earth, planet Earth, around 8 billion years, and then mankind living on Earth for 100,000 plus, and then the weather reporting accurately or whatever, most of the areas for the last 150 years, of which I must say with all the high tech, they're not much closer to predicting the weather than the old timers that look out in the sky and have been living for years. But anyway, having said that, the universe goes through change, and we go through change in life. And I just see it as another change. And when you look at the time element involved, it's microscopic compared to the age of Earth, planet Earth.
So you're pushing and back against that, are you pushing back against climate change?
That, say again?
Are you pushing back against the concept of a changing climate?
I'm just saying that they cry wolf when they need funding. Funding hasn't been very appropriate with the economy the way it was. These scientists who have these models, and most of them don't work. They're just propositions and guesswork, swags, just that wild-ass guess. And I've been around the science community for a long time, and I've supported them, and they just, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't have much confidence in a lot of them is what I'm getting at.
Okay, well, let's examine that a bit. We're kind of off topic here, but the plan was to move eventually in the program to speaking about the president's comments about the Arctic and what will be coming based on his visit. Does anybody want to meet Treadwell? I would imagine you've got something to say about climate change and Pat Porchot as well.
Well, you know, Chuck, on this, the president brought his science advisor with him. John Holdren was there. There's an Alaskan who works with John Holdren named Beth Kertula, who's a former legislator. And, you know, there was a lot of science in Kerry's speech yesterday, a lot of science in the president's speech yesterday. The fact is, you know, I'm going to say for Alaskans who have to deal with cold, dark, and distance, the idea that, you know, climate change policy is going to take away our cars or, you know, tell us we can't heat our homes. I don't think that's true. I think we actually will have realistic responses to it, and we're working on that. On the other hand, it is a, you know, and the president said this yesterday, dealing with this issue is a long-term issue that's going to be very, very tough. And we have had good science. You know, the ice receding is something where we've got to get out there with icebreakers. I'm glad that we got that decision today. We had some other announcements this morning about better science networks, which are incredibly important. There was a great panel that Fran Ulmer chaired yesterday on how communities are more involved with that. So, you know, we can disagree with, you know, agree or disagree on the politics, but the fact is that we're learning more as we go along, and the president's visit has given that a shot in the arm.
Well, and I think that's an interesting and an important point, too, that people can agree or disagree about the politics, but there's really no denying the science. The climate is changing,
right,
and it is accelerated, and we do have to address it. And there's really no room left for saying, well, is that happening or not? No, it's quite clear that that's happening. Pat Porchot, you wanted to add?
Actually, Mead said a lot of things I was going to say. I would just emphasize again that the Glacier Conference did, through a number of very expert folks, bring out the immediacy of the problem and the science base to the issue of climate change. And just to utilize a phrase from what the caller said about this being just a speck in time geologically or in the history of the Earth, that actually is part of the problem, that the changes that we see going on are going on in such a very short period of time. And as the president said, that calls for very accelerated immediate action.
You know, just going back to presidential visits, I took my kids out when George W. Bush came to Elmendorf, and we're at the rope line, and my three kids are there with me, and he turns, you know, I shook his hand and thanked him for putting me on the Arctic Research Commission, and he says to the kids, hey, why aren't you guys in school? and one of my kids said, "Well, we came to see you," and he says, "Was this educational?" So anyway, Bush was good with a quip. I actually was invited to the White House and met him at the rope line as he got off his helicopter one day, and again thanked him for the chance to serve with him. And he says, "Well, you sure brought the Arctic cold with you this time." When Gerry Ford came, you can go to the Ford Library in Grand Rapids. And when he came, Perry Green, your furrier, gave him a fur coat. And Ford was very happy to have a fur coat because he was going from here to Vladivostok in Siberia. And the president bemoaned in his library that Brezhnev liked the fur coat so much he had to give Brezhnev the brand new fur coat he'd just gotten from Perry Green in Anchorage.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, this is just kind of the, you know, so that little visit to Anchorage is enshrined in the weather. The fact that he came here, Dermot, I don't know if you know Kyle Parker, who's an attorney here in town. His dad was Ford's scheduler. And Parker had an Alaska connection with Governor Hickel, who always used to say, I worked with him for 30 years, he used to say that Vladivostok is Russia's front door. And so when they were going to Asia, they decided to have this meeting with the Russians by going in the front door. So that was part of the value of that visit there.
The Washington Post reported that George W. Bush, long before he was president, actually lived in Alaska in the 70s?
Yeah, he lived in Fairbanks. He worked for Neil Burke Alaska International Construction, I think.
Well,
Dermot?
Alaska International Construction, Alaska International Air It was a sort of family of companies that were operating at the time. So in the summer of 1974, he lived here from May till August, I think. And in fact, when he visited Anchorage on one trip, he said he made a big point of saying how he was the only president who ever voted in Alaska and that he had voted in the 1974 primary. Now, and you guys may remember, he said he didn't remember who he voted for. And I think the candidates in that primary would have been, Hammond, Hickel, maybe Keith Miller, I'm not sure.
Yep.
But, anyway, he said he didn't remember who he voted for, but he was proud to have voted in the primary.
And then Hillary Clinton worked on the slime line in Valdez, I think was fired for trying to unionize the fish processing plant down in Valdez and went over, and she's very proud of the fact that she was a spit rat in Homer.
And well, I guess she also worked at the former Mount McKinley National Park, Denali National Parks, for a bit during that summer of 1969. I think it was after she got out of college, before she went to law school. Yeah. It's interesting though. She mentioned this in her autobiography, this little Alaska incident, and she talked about how it was a temporary salmon factory on a pier in Valdez. I don't know what that is exactly, but I mean the temporary salmon. The temporary salmon factory. Yeah, I was wondering if Pat, did you accompany President Clinton when he went to the downtown Delhi?
I didn't. I was involved in the planning of that, and you know how memory fades. I know this has been widely reported. I'm not sure that actually happened. It was planned, and I think that President Clinton's time got shortened and he wasn't able to leave the base, and security had some issues, I remember, in trying to secure the downtown Delhi. I'm not sure that actually happened.
Well, I think I was relying. I checked up the clips the other day, and Stan Jones, I think, wrote about this, and so I trust Stan somewhat. But Clinton did go.
Stan's a good guy.
Stan. That was a joke. I know Stan. But Clinton did give a speech at the Anchorage Museum in which he made much of and he heard the story from Hillary 500 times about how she had worked in Alaska, and that so he thought it was almost like his story because he had heard it so often. But I don't know. I guess the question would be, did he wander off course going from the Anchorage Museum to the downtown?
I think he had a reindeer stew at the downtown Delhi. That's the report.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to note that we had an email from someone who said that according to a number of professional photography sites, it's perfectly legal to take pictures of Air Force One from public property. However, military installations require permission from the CO to take pictures while on base. Clearly, that rule was was not enforced yesterday, but that may explain the earlier incident that happened in 2009. So maybe that's why that happened.
Hey, just going back a little bit further, when Nixon came to see Emperor Hirohito here, it was the first time a Japanese emperor had come on American soil. It was before the 72 election. And Wally Hickel had been governor of Alaska, had been his secretary of the interior, and had been fired. And so the White House calls and says the president would like to meet with Governor Hickel. And Wally, who had been fired, said, you know, my address is 1905 Lusac Drive. I'll be at my front door. And so Nixon landed and came to Turnagain and met with Hickel. And the purpose of the visit was to ask him to second his nomination in Miami for reelection. And this was patching something up. And so there was a political thing done. There was the meeting with Hirohito. This was after he had signed native land claims. So I think there was a celebration of that a little bit. But, you know, presidents have political purposes, too.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about past presidential visits. We're going to move on to the current presidential visit that's happening right now. We're going to go to the phones for just a moment because we have Liz Ruskin, our Washington, D.C. correspondent, who is in Alaska right now helping us cover this visit. And she only has a couple of minutes. She's in Seward. Liz?
Yeah, hi, Lori.
Good morning. What's happening?
Well, I'm at the Seward Airport, and we are awaiting the arrival of Marine One. An advance plane just came in. Sorry, I'm terrible at aviation identification. I couldn't tell you what kind of plane that was. And there's a fire crew on the ground, local Seward Fire Department. And on the highway, there were dozens of cars. Apparently, everyone knows he's landing now. And there were dozens of cars lined up to greet the president.
And have you heard what the schedule will be once he gets there? What's the day going to look like?
Well, it's Exit Glacier and hiking, they tell us. And then he's going to do a tour of Resurrection Bay. And unlike his tour boat's going to be a Coast Guard cutter. So a little bit different there. And I think his day is supposed to last until evening. It's going to be a long day.
Do you have your hiking boots on?
I'm wearing running shoes, but I'm dressed. I am bundled up because it is windy and chilly.
Ah. All right. Well, thanks, Liz. We're glad that you're there. And I'm sure we'll hear more this evening for Alaska News Nightly.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. That was APRN's normally D.C. correspondent, Liz Ruskin, calling in from Seward, where she's in the state helping us cover the president's visit, and she's in Seward today and will be tagging along. I do want to move on to, did you want to add something before we move on to the current visit here?
Well, of course, my strength is philosophy, of course, and it occurs to me global warming is occurring more in the Arctic than any place in the world, and we're in the biggest oil state. So the conflict between oil and global warming is inevitable, and I'm glad it's here. I think we'll deal with it. Mm-hmm. And politicians have to deal with it.
Before we get into that, I just got one more story to tell.
Okay.
I was working for Governor Hickel when Reagan was president, and Reagan was going to Asia. So we were helping write 3x5 cards that he might play with, say, Prime Minister Nakasone to, say, buy Alaska gas, buy resources. We're still trying to sell LNG in Asia, as you know. And Governor Hickel had been part of receiving the Pope a few years before that, and he heard the Pope was coming 2 days after the president was flying through. And so he picked up the phone and called James Baker, who was the White House chief of staff, and said, did you know the Pope's coming through right after the president? And Baker said, we've been trying to get those two fellas' picture taken before the 72 election. I think maybe we'll change our schedule. And that's how Reagan ended up sitting in Fairbanks for 24 hours waiting for the Pope to arrive so that they could have a joint meeting before the 72 election.
That is interesting.
And there's a story that Dave Parker has told me that there was a meeting later on at the White House where the question was, should the president get to a bigger airplane, because Air Force One had always been a 707. And the 747 that the president rides now can go all the way to Asia without refueling if it had to. And Michael Deaver was apparently quoted out of that meeting as saying, the leader of the free world shouldn't have to sit on his hands in Fairbanks, Alaska for anybody, not even the Pope. We need a bigger airplane. So that was one effect of a presidential visit.
All right. We are talking about presidential visits today on Talk of Alaska. And I just want to say that we did invite President Barack Obama on Talk of Alaska. As soon as we found out he was coming to the state, we put that request out there. But clearly he's got a full schedule. And so maybe he'll call in. You never know. But we will take your calls and your comments, and we'll continue the discussion of presidential visits in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Alaska Chamber welcomes President Obama to Anchorage and hopes there's an opportunity to experience what resource development means for Alaskan jobs, education, tax revenue, and Alaskan lives. From oil and gas production and mining to forestry, fishing, and tourism, Alaska's destiny lies in its natural resources and its ability to develop them. Thank you for coming north to see our future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Chamber.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. We have guests in the studio and Dermot Cole on the phone from KUAC in Fairbanks. We also have Pat Porchot, former special assistant to the Department of Interior in the studio. Meade Treadwell, former lieutenant governor and former chair of the U.S. Arctic Commission Research Commission. And Jack Roderick, former Anchorage Borough mayor. Everyone's here today to talk about presidential visits. And we've got some great calls on the line, and I want to get to those in a second. But I also wanted to note that we've talked a little bit about the serious tone that the president took yesterday in his comments. And when the president started speaking, that was Alaska News Nightly last night. We just ran the president's comments. And I was in the studio furiously taking notes as he was talking. I was watching him on a video monitor, and he looked so serious. Mm-hmm. And he repeated several times, we're not acting fast enough. No country is acting fast enough. And I was expecting some enormous announcement to come out during those comments. Now, we've seen that he is going to be making some announcements. We heard some this morning. There will possibly be more in Seward and maybe in Dillingham and Kotzebue. But yesterday when he was speaking, several things that he said were of note. We're going to listen now to just a little bit of his talk.
Earlier this month, I announced the first set of nationwide standards to end the limitless dumping of carbon pollution from our power plants. It's the single most important step America has ever taken on climate change. And over the course of the coming days, I intend to speak more about the particular challenges facing Alaska and the United States as an Arctic power, and I intend to announce new measures to address them.
And we have heard some of those new measures, as you noted, Meade, kind of accelerating the icebreaker program by 2 years. That means that in 5 years, there could be some more help on the way as far as Arctic intervention and having more patrols out there. What would you say generally, all four of you, my guests today, Jack, Dermot, Meade, and Pat, what was your reaction overall to the president's speech? Meade, would you like to start?
I was very glad that the president was telling the nation we're an Arctic nation because of Alaska. I was glad that he recognized that we're the leader in wind diesel. I'm glad he talked about the cost of energy in rural Alaska. And I'm glad he today not only announced accelerating the acquisition of icebreakers, but also a number of things in terms of building ports, more in the way of community monitoring. And, you know, I was in the Bush administration, was a holdover on the Arctic Research Commission to the Obama administration, and we've tried to have a bipartisan Arctic agenda on the things we need here in the Arctic. And I thought it was a rather bipartisan talk, and that I thought was impressive. I have no idea how well his speech will play with the audience he was really going for, which is the nations headed to Paris. But in terms of addressing the Alaska issues, I think they were pretty sensitive to what we're concerned about.
All right. Pat Porchot.
Well, this may sound very un-Alaskan, but I wasn't necessarily always looking for the Alaska slant to everything he said. And I think we have to view this. It was within an international context. He was speaking to other Arctic nations and other nations that will be coming together in Paris later this year. And I think it's fair to say that, I mean, he was setting the stage, obviously, for those talks and hoping to engage and enlist the world community in taking real steps towards limiting carbon emissions and other steps to combat climate change. And I think that was a big part of the message yesterday.
And Jack Roderick, were you listening to his speech yesterday?
Oh, yes, I listened. I was impressed, of course. He's apparently extremely serious about this issue. He has other issues to be serious about, of course. But, yeah, I was impressed. He and the Pope and my daughter Libby think this is the number one issue in the world. And like I say, we're the biggest oil state. So here we got, you know, we want more oil. And is that good? Well, I'm an oil man, so I think it's good. But I think I'm not up to speed. And I think he is getting me up to speed.
All right. And Dermot, your reaction to the president's speech yesterday?
Lori, I was also struck by how serious he was. There were no jokes in that little talk at all. And he was, as Pat said, I believe, he was definitely speaking to an audience. This was not a speech designed for an Alaska audience. It was designed for that audience of foreign dignitaries with an eye towards what internationally might be done. So it didn't surprise me that there was no real Alaska-specific announcement there. I do think Jack is onto something. Now, we are headed for there's a point at which these lines intersect, you know, with between energy development and climate change. The one reason that Alaska was excluded, Alaska and Puerto Rico, Hawaii, I think, were excluded from those carbon emission rules was because of the lack of connection to a grid that goes beyond Alaska and the sort of lack of information about the situation in these parts of in the parts of the nation that are not connected to the lower 48. So anyway, and the EPA has said, well, something will be forthcoming on that. We just don't know what it is yet.
He did make one small joke. He said climate deniers are on their own shrinking island. Right. He did say that.
Lori, I don't think that's a joke. I think he was.
Yeah, that's true. He was serious.
Was that aimed at Donald Trump? I mean, I'm not sure who that was aimed at. No.
Yeah, somebody said Kerry's remarks. I was at the reception. I was in the room with the president yesterday, and I'd say, you know, there was fascination. He had just finished a meeting with Alaska Native leaders, mm-hmm. which I thought was very important. But around the inner ring, right next to the president, you had foreign ministers from Norway, from Sweden. You had the ambassador from Singapore. You had Chinese, Korean, Japanese. You had 19 nations represented there. Interesting things going on. Right after this show, I'm going on television in Canada because our company invests in the Arctic. And Canada has an election coming up, so they didn't send their foreign minister. They sent the deputy foreign minister, their senior Arctic official. Russia's ambassador was there. I saw Ambassador Kislyak, who I've kept up a relationship with because I believe we've got to be able to talk to our neighbors no matter how much we disagree. And he told me, yes, it's going to be slower, but we are going to have better cooperation on shipping. And so, you know, that was impressive there. And they did have a delegation. They could have said, no, we're not coming. Singapore has a, you know, large new interest in the Arctic. Korea's president has stated many times Arctic shipping is going to be something very important for the future of Korea. So they had a strong delegation. And so I think you know, just going back to Jack's point about philosophy, most of the nations there either consume a lot of oil or they're working to produce a lot of oil. And we all know that you know, we can work to make our energy cleaner, but we also know we got to go fill our gas tank to get to the next stop. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean we're wrong or morally corrupt or anything else like that. We, you know, as long as the world's using oil, we'd like to be the producers. Thank you very much. And the president said that. He said, you know, he's had this all of the above energy policy. I could think of more of the above that he could put in it. But the fact is that he referred to unstable nations in the Middle East and how we've got to work together on energy.
I want to go back to the phones here in just a moment. But one more question as we're talking about the Arctic. The Law of the Sea, the United States has not ratified the Law of the Sea. How important is that in the context, or is it, in the context of the Arctic? It seems like it will be difficult to do what needs to be done as an Arctic nation without that signature.
Pat and
no
I
one wants to wade into this.
Lori, I think, Dermot.
Dermot, you've written about this lately. Yeah. I've heard a little feedback.
It's very important to approve this treaty. And by and large, the Democrats have supported it, and the Republican establishment in Alaska has supported it. You know, Senator Sullivan has chosen to distance himself from remarks he made as a Bush administration appointee, saying that he doesn't believe in this in this treaty. This would really allow the United States to claim a much larger share of the Arctic Ocean, and there maybe some problems with it. I'm sure there are, but it seems like a very good idea for Alaska and for the United States.
In the panels yesterday,
Mead Treadwell.
Yeah, I wasn't in the session with the foreign ministers, but in the panel yesterday, we talked about how we're going to try to regulate high seas fishing in the Arctic. And the map of the high seas areas that we would agree to if you overlaid Russia's claim are pretty much right in Russia's claim. And the fascinating thing about this, and Dermot, this is a problem with the treaty. The treaty does have several problems. One of them is it doesn't guarantee access for research. And so I raised my hand at Fran Ulmer's panel and to help remind us that we need to get a research agreement in the Arctic so that we've got access as we do that. Law of the Sea didn't protect that. Most of the conservative opposition, I was a conservative, ran for the U.S. Senate last year, and I've said I wouldn't vote for the treaty until we fix the issue of paying taxes to the International Seabed Authority. All right, but I also got pummeled by Joe Miller because I said that the treaty is important for Alaska for four reasons. It gives us the 200-mile limit. It gives us freedom of navigation in the Arctic. It lets us protect our environment unlike any other coastal part of the world. And it lets us make this new claim that could be the size of two Californians. So we've got to work this out. We can say, you know, one party's bad and one party's good. We've got to work this out to get the things that Alaskans need out of this treaty.
Mm-hmm. Any additional comments, or should we?
Well, I would just add that, you know, Senator Ted Stevens supported it, Senator Frank Murkowski supported it, and Senator Lisa Murkowski supported it, and the oil industry supports it, and you know, it's hard to find an organized group that doesn't support it, except for certain parts of the Republican Party.
All right, we are talking about all kinds of things today in relation to presidential visits to Alaska. And I wanted to make note that President Obama, there's still time for you to call in if you'd like to join us today on Talk of Alaska.
I'm ready.
Right now, we're going to hear from Russ in Juneau. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning. I have the one of the best President Reagan visit stories that I've ever heard, at least until this morning, some really interesting ones. When he was here in Juneau in the 90s, they left Juneau aboard a boat called the Silverado. And my wife and I lived on a boat called the Reliance, and we were staying in Taku Harbor, traveling to Petersburg for work. And the Silverado captain, the Silverado was owned by John Wayne's widow. And so he would take, she would commission for the boat to be used for some pretty important people, of course, like President Reagan, I guess. And so they had this really beautiful live well on the back of the Silverado that always was empty. So I always would bring Reed a big bag of crabs to put in it to make his guests go wow. And he had some really wow guests. So it was always fun. And so I went over there to the swim steps on the Silverado when they tied up, they anchored up in Taku Harbor on their way south. Brought Reed a bag of crabs, and me in a tie-dye t-shirt with very long hair, almost in the middle of my back, put my knee on the swim step and said, "Hey, Reed." And then right next to him was President Reagan. And I just, the only thing that I could say was, "Wow." And I said, "I know who you are, but I'm just Russ." And some curly-headed, gray curly-headed fellow leaned over the swim steps and made me feel more easy. And said, because I was afraid to move, because there was like a big guy with big huge arms on one corner of the boat, and I just was like, it was very surprising. And so he said, "So come on up and meet the president." And I did, that same fellow said, "Is there anything that you'd like to ask the president?" And I said, "As a matter of fact, there is. This is that once-in-a-lifetime thing, one guy to another, out in the middle of nowhere here. Why do you think that 80% of America doesn't care to vote?" And it was like, for that brief moment, the fish stopped swimming. And and the president said, he put his hand on one of my shoulders and kind of leaned into me with that little, with his head. And he said, "The system isn't perfect, but it's the best in the world." So there you go.
Well, that is a great story, Russ. Thanks for calling in with that.
Good story.
Yes, it was. I want to make note of an email that we had from a listener. Sue says that, she says, "I'm sorry that at least a flyby of the Diomede Islands wasn't planned for. It would be an eye-opener for President Obama as well as national and state reps traveling with him to see firsthand just how close we are to our Russian neighbors and what a narrow and vulnerable strait current and future shipping will be passing through." She says, "It's my experience that only seeing is believing, and too few people have ever seen the Bering Strait." Now, we don't know exactly where the president will be going as he heads north. We know that he's planning to go to Dillingham and Kotzebue. Any thought about why Kotzebue, Pat?
Before I retired this last spring, we arranged a visit for Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell. And we also went to Kotzebue and also visited Kivalina, which, as most people know, is being threatened by severe erosion. They're on a little barrier island sitting out in the Chukchi Sea. And I think that there were delegations, both from Shishmaref and Kivalina, over the past year or two that had visited with White House officials and others in D.C. and here. And so I think a combination of those visits, the attention on erosion for coastal villages, two real vivid examples being Shishmaref and Kivalina in that area, I think that was a focus that brought attention to White House folks to hopefully bring the president to Kotzebue. I think that, as reported in the paper, there were problems in physically landing in Kivalina. It wouldn't surprise me at all, though, if it's relatively close by air, that he would make a aerial inspection of Kivalina, which, you know, there's a lot of negative talk, or it's put in a negative cast, this term photo op. I actually am a huge believer in photo ops, and I think that's the kind of thing, if the president physically himself saw, even from the air, the village of Kivalina, it would be, and it is so striking that it is an example that would be not only publicized, but an educational moment for the president of the United States.
Pictures is 1,000 words. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the president's visit to Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Chamber welcomes President Obama to Anchorage and hopes there's an opportunity to experience what resource development means for Alaskan jobs, education, tax revenue, and Alaskan lives. From oil and gas production and mining to forestry, fishing, and tourism, Alaska's destiny lies in its natural resources and its ability to develop them. Thank you for coming north to see our future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Chamber.
Well, as always, I have a ton of questions that we're not going to get to, but I'd like to get to some of the calls because it is Talk of Alaska. So let's talk to some more Alaskans. Karen is in Metlakatla. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Lori. I hope I can laugh without coughing. So I just have to mention with President Warren Harding's Voyage of Understanding is what it was called, to the far north in late July and early August of 1923. And we have so many photographs because of our own photographer that we had during that time, which is Benjamin A. Haldane. And so we had coverage, and I just happened to have what are called memory books, which were school albums. And so there were pictures in there of the president's visit and down at the cannery with offering him, sitting up at the old school, the government school, and also offering him, giving him some salmon to take home with him.
Oh, that's a great story. Thank you so much, Karen, for calling in with that a long time memory ago of President Harding's visit. And we have another caller that has something to say about President Harding, which is kind of interesting that we're going back so far. James is in Juneau. Good morning, James.
Hello. Good morning, Lori. This is James Brooks calling from the Juneau Empire. I was at the speech yesterday, but I wanted to mention, too, an event that I saw in Politico, and maybe Dermot can chime in on this. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but apparently when Harding came up north on a destroyer coming past Taku Glacier, he asked that the destroyer launch a few 5-inch shells into the glacier so he could watch the ice calve. And there was an interesting line that this president is going to walk on the glacier, and the first president to visit Alaska tried to blow one up.
Huh. Dermot, have you heard anything about that?
No, but that's a good story. I have not heard that. He did travel on the Henderson, I believe the name of the ship was, and he was accompanied by a couple of Navy vessels. So it's possible.
Well, I suppose that long ago, no one thought that, you know, people did things then that you would never dream of doing today, that's for sure. So, interesting story. Thank you, James, for calling from Juneau. David is in Fairbanks and has a story about a different presidential visit. David.
Hi. I just wanted to relate my story, Clinton's visit to Anchorage. I think I was the state party chair, and the president came over to the museum to give his weekly radio speech. Hillary walks in the door and is greeting the first person sitting in the corner, and it's Vern, who was with the NEA at that point. And she turns around to Clinton and says, "Look, Bill, this is where Vernon ended up." You know, and people tell you they're from, they know the Clintons from Arkansas or whatever, but that was very funny. The president gives his speech sitting in front of the Sidney Lawrence painting of McKinley or Denali now, of course. And when he finishes, the procession line, is first person online is Hickel, and Ted Stevens is right behind him, and the governor's approaching to shake the hand of the president, and Ted Stevens is climbing over the back of Hickel to talk to the president. And at that point, you realize that this is Ted Stevens, senior senator, United States Senate. He's never talked to Clinton. Because I think at the opening of Clinton's presidency, Stevens badmouthed him on the floor of the Senate. But it was just something to watch Stevens trying to get to the president over at Hickel's back.
Interesting memory. We had an email from Jacqueline who says, in 1959, President Kennedy campaigned at the Alaska State Fair. He rode into the grandstand in a convertible, which immediately got stuck in the mud. Kennedy, along with his supporters, all jumped down from the open convertible, pushed the car out of the mud hole with laughs and applause from the crowd. Well, that's a pretty interesting memory. I don't know if anybody can confirm that or not, but it's fun to have these stories. In our last couple of minutes, I know that, Jack Roderick, you've mentioned a number of times you're somebody who believes in oil development, but we have this balancing act that people are concerned about between protecting the environment and also developing resources, and how many see these two at odds with each other. Conservationists are angry that the president approved permits offshore for Shell, saying, you know, that he should not have done that if he's really serious about climate change. Any thoughts about how we are needing to balance the protection of the climate and acknowledging what's happening as far as fossil fuel emissions against development of our resources here?
Well, this is one of the major issues that we're going to have to live with for quite a while. We're dependent on oil, not only Alaska, but the world. You know, all our energy basically comes from fossil fuels. So I've watched the last 40, 50 years going from coal to gas. Now we're a little cleaner fuel with gas than we had with coal, and coal's going to have to go away, and politically that's going to be very difficult. And then we're going to, you know, the oil industry is probably the most powerful industry in the world financially. So that politics will be extremely difficult. I don't know when we're going to switch over to some less fossil fuel economy. My daughter says it's going to be much sooner than I think.
Pat Porchot, we've got just about a minute left here.
Well, I think we are in a transition now on energy sources, and I think it was Mead mentioned President Obama has often talked about all of the above strategy, and clearly oil and gas figure into the oil all of the above strategy as we're phasing in more renewable energy sources. I would add on the Shell and the Chukchi Sea exploration, it is exploration, it is not development. It started with lease sale under a prior administration. Shell bid over $2.5 billion for those leases. There are some legal aspects to that about if you deny exploration, there could be liability to buy back the leases. And so, you know, that's kind of an anecdote in a much broader picture.
All right. Well, thank you so much to my guests today. We had a lively discussion about past and present presidential visits. Thanks to Pat Porchot, Mead Treadwell, Jack Roderick, and Dermot Cole on the line from Fairbanks. And thank you for listening today to Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety. The Alaska Chamber welcomes President Obama to Anchorage and hopes there's an opportunity to experience what resource development means for Alaskan jobs, education, tax revenue, and Alaskan lives. From oil and gas production and mining to forestry, fishing, and tourism, Alaska's destiny lies in its natural resources and its ability to develop them. Thank you for coming north to see our future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Chamber. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.